The religion of Islam is on a worldwide rise. When nations become Islamic states, Christianity is often outlawed. More and more Western countries are allowing Sharia law to coexist with their own laws. Fear grips governments as Muslims demand ever-growing control in the places they live. What should Christians do as Islam's dominance spreads? Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. This week, Erwin Lutzer talks with us about the rise of Islam and about a book he's written to inform believers what this rise means to them and their churches. Here now is Dr. Lutzer.
Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and I'm so glad that you have joined us today because today's broadcast is going to be quite different. As a matter of fact, it's going to be a discussion on Islam. The Lord enabled me to write a book entitled The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, An Informed Response to Islam's War Against Christianity. I do need to tell you, and I'm going to be saying this in subsequent broadcasts, that in my opinion, this is the most important book I have ever written. It contains within it a burden for the church and for where we go from here. What I'm excited about is joining me today in the studio is Dr. Samuel Naaman. Now, he teaches world missions at the Moody Bible Institute. Including in that is he teaches a course on Islam. So can you imagine the opportunity that we are going to have to be able to dialogue together and the insights that this dear brother is going to give us? From time to time, I may simply refer to him as Dr. Samuel.
That's fine.
But we're so glad that you are here today.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer.
And something else as we begin. Dr. Naaman was kind enough to write the introduction to my book. And I do need to say, brother, that you gave it a very good word.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I have been a student of missions and being raised in Pakistan and raised in the home of a convert. My father, as you know, actually came to Christ out of Islam. And I have seen many books, maybe, and I've studied a lot in the last 25 years or so. But when I read the manuscript several times, I was really deeply touched. And I also shared the manuscript with a good friend of mine who is serving in Germany. And he comes out of Islam also, Dr. Isaac, and he's been serving with Evangelical Carmel Mission and Call of Hope, as we call it in the U.S. And he himself was an imam, actually. You know, his testimony is part of this book. So between both of us and a couple of other people, we put this thing together. English is not my native language, and I needed the editing being done with the help of my dear wife who is here. So what you see in foreword is not, with due respect, any sugar-coated words. What I shared in the foreword actually is from my heart, and this is one of the best books that I have seen in the last 50 years, as I comment in the foreword.
Wow, that is so encouraging to me. And I just want the listeners to know how this book came about. You know, in 2009, Rebecca and I had the privilege of being on a cruise to Turkey. Well, we had a chance to see the seven churches of Revelation, the various cities.
Sure.
And as we went there, one of the things I noticed, of course, is that there are no visible churches. There are only mosques.
Yes.
And as I looked at that earlier, one other time I had been in Istanbul, and I was with a Muslim guide all day, very devout. In fact, when he wanted to pray in a mosque, I just told him, you go and pray, and then I'll wait for you outside the mosque and so forth. But he made this statement to me. Now, I don't think he'd ever make this publicly, but he said, just like Christianity showed its superiority over paganism by being able to overcome it, our ability to be able to overcome the church and to replace churches with mosques and basically destroy the church is proof of the superiority of Islam.
Yeah.
And so this troubled me deeply because I remember going back to the ship with such a heavy heart, Dr. Samuel, because in my mind I was saying, this doesn't make Jesus look good. You know, in other words, It seems as if Islam has triumphed. Yeah. So part of the reason that I wrote this book is because of that experience. Mm-hmm. And also, and we'll get to this in subsequent sure. broadcasts, but also the issue really was, how does this work with Christianity?
Yes.
How do we theologically deal with this issue? So that was actually the genesis of this book.
Good. My thought is this. I'm sure, you know, you are a scholar of the Bible, and you're also a pastor of a good church in Chicago and even in the U.S. But my thought is, why were you so touched by that comment? Or why did you take on this amazing project to write something about it?
Very good question. You know, this book, I recognize that there are many good yes. books out there about Islam. Books on how to witness to Muslims, books on what the Quran teaches. The distinctive of this book is this. First of all, it will instruct Christians as to how Islam has worked in the past, what it's like for Christians to live in an Islamic country, and the fact that what should the church be doing now?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get to this in the last of the series of broadcasts, but we're going to be talking about what the church should be doing now. So in one sense, I don't know of any other book that treats yeah. it this way, the lessons that grow out of it. And you know, brother, what happened is one day I came back to the ship and I sat beside a swimming pool and I had a notepad in front of me. And I said, oh God, show me the lessons that these non-existent churches have to say to the American church.
Yes.
And just like that, about 9 or 10 lessons came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I boiled them down. 7 of them, of course, are really the heart of this book, though it also includes things specifically for America.
One thing that I just want to encourage the listeners to think is, you know, you can read volumes about reaching Muslims, the theological background and this and that, but I have not found a single book that is available on a layman level. I mean, either they are very scholarly or they don't have anything to offer. But in this book, at least, I saw that you start with engaging with Islam and the teachings of Islam. But at every chapter, at the end of every chapter, there's a living testimony. It's not, and the living testimony is of present age. It's not like 200 years old testimony of a person who has come to Christ. So I think that to me was so attractive. To read the book and say, okay, fine, this is what we have done. But then ending each chapter with a living testimony of a brother or sister who has come out of Islam, I think that was very unique.
Yeah, it is. And the desire is, of course, that we witness to Muslims. And by the way, if you're listening today and you know a Muslim friend, or perhaps you are a Muslim listening, we encourage you to keep listening. Get on the phone some of your Muslim friends, invite them to this broadcast, because what you're going to find is we are going to expose Islam, but at the same time, we're going to give a witness for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, Samuel, many Muslims in America certainly would prefer simply to live in
yes.
peace. They are not part of the jihadists, as
yes.
we call them. But at the same time, Islam doesn't really give them that opportunity because, first of all, Sharia law really applies to everything, and the strict Muslim should live by it.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I think this is where the dilemma comes. And you know, we always hear in the media, well, where are those moderates? And where are the people who want to live in peace? They are there. That's what we call them, silent majority. I mean, yes, of course, majority of the Muslims who have come to this country, they have left the challenging situations back home, and they are attracted to America. And Dr. Lutzer, they will be attracted to America by any means, as a lot of people come here for as refugees of religious persecution, economic persecution, and you can go on and on and on. But here comes the dilemma. Even for those moderate Muslims who are listening and who are peaceful, when they are challenged by an imam in a local mosque here, and when they are challenged by Quranic words and verses, they have to basically comply to the Quranic teaching. So, I mean, we are not against, let me just say that, we are not against the Muslims who are here peacefully, but allow us also to pinpoint some of the challenges that they are part of. They are in a dilemma. They just don't know what to do. On one hand, they want to be peaceful. On the other hand, when they go to the mosque, they're bombarded with these fiery sermons, And then they said, okay, fine. But ultimately, they have to follow the Quran.
That's right.
And that's the main thing.
And the main thing is that they fear being accused of apostasy.
Exactly.
Or lack of commitment.
Yeah.
And so the fear, in fact, I was just reading in the Quran the other day, the Muhammad said that fear serves me. That's actually sort of a paraphrase,
sure.
But the idea is fear has been a great benefit to me. So many of these dear people live in a tremendous amount of fear, and we need to keep that in mind. And here's another example of how Islam, by the way, would it be correct to say, because I say it in the book, that for a Muslim to say, well, I'm a Muslim, but I don't accept Sharia, it would be something like a Jewish person saying, I accept the Torah, but not the Ten Commandments.
It doesn't work. I think it's our wishful thinking in the West, and especially, let's just keep it to the Americans when I say the word America means here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wishful thinking. Well, of course, they are Muslim, but they don't want Sharia. Well, at the end of the day, they have to comply with the Sharia law, if at all, they want to remain in Islam.
That's right.
Because Islam and Islamic law, you cannot. There is no separation of church and state. Put it this way. I think that's in our lay people's term will come. You cannot separate the Islamic teaching, Islamic law from the life of a Muslim, if the person wants to be a true follower of Islam.
You know, of course, we're talking about Sharia right now. It means the path. It encompasses all of life, the Quran, the Sunnah, which is really the Muslim traditions, the following of Muhammad, and it isn't optional. And what we need to do is to keep that in mind. Now, you know, there's something else I want to point out, however, and this is one of the problems that the peaceful Muslim has.
Yes.
You have an organization, the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Corporation,
yes.
And it made a resolution, and they say that they have 57 member nations, okay, that are Muslim. In 1990, this body adopted the Cairo Declaration on Human Rights in Islam, quote, which officially exempted all Muslim countries from compliance with the UN Universal Declaration on Human Rights and replaced it with Islamic law. Now, let's talk about that. And by the way, we aren't even at the first lesson yet of my book.
This is all introduction.
Or experiences, or something.
Yeah,
we are going to get to that.
Yeah,
so listeners, just keep hanging on. But I'm very concerned about this because, as you know, in Islam, there's the desire to have a universal law against blasphemy.
Yes.
And we are going to talk about that. We just mentioned it today, but this is very serious because blasphemy can be almost anything.
Well, I mean, I think the recent example is, of course, you go back 2-3 years ago, there was an issue with Danish cartoons and others, but very recent, the so-called video that was posted, you know, and all that stuff. And then the reaction to that video, of course, against America and Americans and our interests and whatever. This is a very simple example. And they have brought this issue back again, the hate speech.
Right.
What is hate speech? The challenging thing is, of course, now a lot of times we are reading in different blogs that while the hate, and I just read in one of the statements by Council of American Islamic Relations, CARE, which is the kind of the people in Washington, D.C.
Run by the Brotherhood.
Yes. And they say, well, you know, if Christians are so passionate about it, we don't promote violence, but at least they should speak up. They should at least speak up if something is done for the name of Christ. But that's not the hate speech that they are trying to present.
No.
From their perspective, it is anything that is said against the Prophet Muhammad. And I think the challenge here is for our Western friends, because we have been so enamored, or at least the values that we have as well, free speech and this, there is no concept of free speech in Pakistani or other Muslim states. Free speech is okay as long as it remains to your family and other things. But the moment you talk about Islam and the Prophet Islam, forget it. You cannot express anything about it.
You know, I don't know if you've seen the book Silence. I'm so glad that it came out while I was writing my book here, because it is published, I think it is, by the Hudson Institute on Religious Liberty, and it's very scholarly. And in it, they talk about how free speech is being marginalized. For example, if you criticize Islam's view of women and so forth, you can be branded as an apostate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are Christians dying in the Middle East today because they are insulting the Prophet, because they're Christians, because their belief in the Trinity is an insult. to Muhammad.
Another aspect is Pakistan. I mean, we talk about the challenges in the Middle East, but look at the blasphemy law in Pakistan, 295C, very simple aspect. If you say anything against the Prophet Muhammad, you could be sentenced to death.
Right.
And many people have been sentenced to death, thank God, by God's grace in the last 25 years. The death sentence has not been carried out, Dr. Lutzer, but many of the believers have been killed in court, in chains. I mean, they have come for a hearing in the courts, and the extremists come and they kill. And they have also killed the Muslim judges. So,
and anyone then who can be accused, even falsely, of blasphemy, they're dead.
Yes.
Now, you know what we have to do, Brother Samuel? We have to get to the first lesson of the book. If you've just joined us, I've written a book entitled The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, An Informed Response of Islam's War Against Christianity. So that's what it is that we're talking about. And I'm here with Dr. Samuel Naaman, who teaches world missions at Moody Bible Institute, a great expert in Islam. Later on in one of the broadcasts, we'll ask him for a brief testimony of his father, who was a convert from Islam, and how this all works out. Now, lesson number one. Oh, go ahead, though, brother.
Yeah,
you had a question.
I mean, you know, we have presented the case for the book, and all the, I think all that stuff is very good. But my thought is this. You make a comment that how has radical left in America joined Islam to promote the value of tolerance and other aspects that you see, at least in the first few pages of your book?
Yeah, you know, actually, that's also in the intro. What I do is I show that Andrew McCarthy here, who's an expert, has written an excellent book about this. But what he shows is that the left in America wants hate speech laws.
Yes.
They want to destroy Christianity and destroy democracy. Now, the way in which we know it. Now, the point is this, that Islam and the radical left have two very different visions for America.
Sure. Yes.
But for now, they are united.
Okay.
They are united
yes.
in hate speech laws and in other ways, and the restriction of religious freedom and the destruction, basically, of Christianity.
Yeah. So at least that much is very clear that they have joined forces and then the challenges that we have. But I will. I think the word Sharia, Dr. Lutzer, you know, of course, you know, has been popped up in many places. And by the way, just for the benefit of listeners, there is a Sharia Board of America already incorporated in Chicago, Northside.
Yeah.
So I mean, it is not only the words that you hear or, you know, the court hearings and all those things. But please tell us, what does Sharia mean and why is it so significant for our purpose? And by the way, for listeners, it's on pages 34 and 35.
Yeah, you know, actually, as we already mentioned, it refers to the path.
Yes.
And the fact that we have to be willing to understand the fact that it encompasses all of life for the Muslim. And I have some quotes in the book that we don't even have time to get to where it shows that really it is for all of the world.
Yes.
Because after all, the whole world belongs to Allah, and it's the responsibility of the Muslims to impose Allah's views and his laws as found in the holy writings of the Quran, as it is understood by the Muslims, and the Sunnah upon the world. Brother Samuel, we need to hurry to lesson number one.
Okay.
Lesson number one is this. I'll give it, and then I'll explain
how
this came about, and I'll give the essence of the chapter, and then we'll work through. Lesson number one is this, that we cannot take the existence of the church for granted. We can't take it for granted. That was the first thing that came to me when I sat down after being at the seven churches of Revelation, which, of course, no longer exist. And how the fact that mosques now dot the countryside. And this is actually where I talk about the Church of Holy Wisdom.
Yes, yes.
And I had an experience there. I was there maybe 7 or 8 years ago with this Muslim guide. And he showed me, have you been there, by the way?
No,
the Church
I've
of
not.
Holy Wisdom. Okay, it's a beautiful church.
Yes.
I had a great interest in it because the architecture of Moody Church is actually patterned, or at least inspired by
the church,
Hagia Sophia. Yeah. If you look into our sanctuary, you can see the Byzantine architecture and all.
Sure.
But the Muslim guide took me around the balcony where there were crosses that were in the original masonry.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is he showed me how they were chiseled out and defaced because he said no Muslim can ever pray in the presence of a cross.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. That church was dedicated in 537. And what we need to do is to get through this very, very quickly here. The Turks conquered it in 1453.
Yes, Constantinople.
And that's, yes, and yes, that was actually the beginning of what we call the Ottoman Empire, yes, which lasted until 1922,
exactly,
after the war. And we're going to be getting to that in another session as well. And this becomes huge in terms of the expansion of Islam, yes, and becomes the capital of the Ottoman Empire. Now, I just want to point out that we're going to say a few words about mosques in Islam, and then our broadcast is going to be over there, brother. What? And that is this. Let me just simply say that the mosque in Islam is incredibly important, isn't it?
Yes.
And the turning of churches into mosques. Thousands of churches in the Middle East, yes, have been turned into mosques, and that becomes symbolic of their victory.
It is.
Building mosques at the point of their victory, which has huge implications for the 9/11 site.
And it is also very significant, Dr. Lutzer, when churches are converted into mosques. When I was growing up in Pakistan, we used to read those news, and, you know, before whatever internet, it is very symbolic because what it says is, okay, this is where we are. We are making a stand now when we are converting churches into mosques.
And that's exactly, of course, what happens. And huge mosques are built at the point of Muslim victories.
Sure.
And that's why we have the controversy there. 81%, I point out, of the mosques in America contain jihadist kinds of literature. The idea of peace coming from these mosques, which we sometimes hear about, is, of course, not the case, and we need to keep that in mind. At any rate, we're going to be concluding this broadcast in just a moment. What I'd like to do is to encourage you, however, to tune in next time. As you can tell, Dr. Samuel here has a lot more to say, and so do I, because what we want to do is to help you to understand Islam. But above all, we are not trying to incite fear. You know, yes, brother, I love the words of Eric Metaxas, who, yeah, says that a person who is fearful is not worshiping Jesus, yeah, Christ. So give us, just as we conclude, a couple of sentences to encourage us to witness to Muslims.
I just said in my foreword, disengagement from Islam or with Muslims is not an option for a believer. We have to engage with them with the love of Christ and the truth of the Word of God. Those two things, Dr. Lutzer, go hand in hand. Fear is not an option.
That's right.
Fear is not an option. You know, I always tell my students that we always fight a defeated enemy on the cross. The enemy was defeated. He has been defeated.
Yeah.
And we need to engage and invite and have engagement with our Muslim brothers.
And that's exactly why in my book I conclude with an entire chapter entitled What the Church Should Be Doing Now and What I Anticipate the Future Is Going to Hold.
And a very solid
so
prayer.
So you be sure to tune in next time. Sure. For Running to Win, as we continue this interesting discussion. And remember the name of the book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, An Informed Response to Islam's War with Christianity. God bless you, and we'll see you right here next time.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer, and our thanks also to Dr. Samuel Naaman from the faculty of Moody Bible Institute. It's crucial for believers to understand what the rise of Islam means to the Church of Jesus Christ. A copy of Erwin Lutzer's new book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, is waiting for you. We'd like to send it as our thank you for your gift of any amount to support the outreach of Running to Win. Call right now at 1-888-218-9337. That's 1-888-218-9337. Or write to us at Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. The address once again is Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Mention The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent when you write or call. Reach us online at rtwoffer.com. That's rtwoffer, all one word, .com. Running to Win's purpose is to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. Don't miss tomorrow's program as The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent continues. We'll learn more about what it means for someone to convert to Islam and how tough it is to ever convert out of Islam. For Dr. Erwin Lutzer, this is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is sponsored by the Moody Church.